It's David Alorca here, and welcome back to My Protein's brand new podcast called The Scoop, where we do just that. We get you the scoop on the most nail-biting, intense, controversial topics in fitness, with our expert guests providing the information to help you make your mind up on what to believe. Topics discussed in gyms, pubs, and just around about anywhere around the world surrounding sports, nutrition, and training, this is where you're going to get the scoop. Today's topic is definitely one that's debated in and around gyms and in around five-a-sides pitches up and down the country, and that is, are you really fit if you can't run a mile? To discuss this, we've got two brilliant guests. Mr. Colin Jackson, a former Olympic hurdler from 1988 to 2004, who coached other Olympic hopefuls in swimming and athletics too. Currently working in the media, commentating and featured on Who Do You Think You Are and Strictly Come Dancing. Yes, the tango. I see you. And Mr. Lawrence Shackley, a.k.a. Big Loz, a GB and World Strongman finalist, Europe's Strongest Man competition champion in 2016, and a man who went on Deal or No Deal, lifted Mr. Noel Edmonds himself after winning a glorious £20,000. Big Loz, Colin Jackson, so good to have you both. How are you doing?
I'm really well. Yeah, it is great to be here.
And we're going to start with a little thing we call this or that. So we're going to go through some quick fire questions. I'm going to start with you, Colin.
Okay.
And it's either this or that. Don't think too long. Just go with your gut and okay. Go for it, right?
Right.
All right. All right, let's go. Sprinting or hurdles?
Oh, hurdles.
Cooked breakfast or roast dinner?
Oh, cooked breakfast.
Morning or evening training?
Morning.
Barefoot or shoes inside?
Oh, barefoot.
All day. Ketchup or brown sauce?
Neither.
Okay. All right. If you had to choose one, what would it be?
Well, it'd be on sausage sandwiches, red sauce, and on bacon sandwiches, brown sauce.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll let you get away with that one. All right. Lawrence, over to you, Big Loz.
Okay.
Never exercise again or never talk again?
Ooh. Never talk again.
Yes. bed made or unmade?
Unmade for me. The wife will say made, but yeah, she gets annoyed with me for that.
Would you rather live underwater or live underground?
Underground, I can still breathe, I guess.
All right. More of a badger than a fish. I see you. Okay. Twitter or Instagram?
Instagram.
Eat before or after training?
Both.
There's going to be a both question, right?
Both enduring training as well.
Sometimes. Depends how long the session is.
But yeah, I'm just going to crack it open and ask you guys, like, can somebody actually really say they're fit if they can't run a mile? Colin, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, I knew you'd go to me straight away, first of all. I knew you'd say that. I knew you'd put me under that pressure there. You know, I would say, listen, when we're talking about running that mile, I'm not saying to somebody to be a world record holder and run like Sir Mo Farah over a mile distance. We're not really asking that whatsoever. But I think it is really important that you have complete fitness. So you have the opportunity to be able to run a decent mile and be able to finish it and recover quickly. Because remember, fitness is really only judged about how fast you recover more than whether you can do it. Because all of us can do a mile, but some will look like death's door once they finish, and others will be able to do their shoelace up and skip off and make themselves a pasta meal to recover.
All right, okay, yeah, no, I hear that.
So you must be able to. So in a nutshell, I would say, yes, you should be fit. You should run a mile. You should be fit. You should. You need to be able to run a decent mile to be fit. That's how I feel.
I have to agree with Colin there. You know, despite the fact I'm a heavyweight athlete that competes in a power sport, I can easily run a mile. You know, if I couldn't, I'd be very disappointed in myself. Mm. And as a strong man, you need that mobility aspect as well. I think pretty much every sport, you need some kind of general fitness. Yes, we're going to have specific training that we're going to focus on for our individual disciplines. But at the end of the day, if you can't run a mile, like Colin said, you can't call yourself fit. You just can't.
Why is the mile? What I want to know is why is the mile? Because obviously this is something that people throw in there, and usually it's quite a bit of an over exaggeration. Because most actual people, as Colin even touched on, can run a mile or can do a mile. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm. I mean, you say running, you know what I mean? Obviously, not at like breakneck pace. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm. And most people could actually get over the line, maybe a brisk jog, so on and so forth. But I think the deeper thing here is talking about the cardiovascular area of fitness. Do you see what I'm saying? And so is that the barometer of fitness? As in, if that is missing, can somebody not be declared to be fit, in essence?
Right, I get what you're saying. I totally get what you're saying. Now, and all of us will know clearly, if you're working out in the gym, if you're lifting weights, we know our heart rate is being raised, right? Mm. We know that for that particular moment in time. But that heart rate only raises for a tiny time in relative terms. It's a fraction of what we could be doing. To get that general fitness up and running, you've got to get your cardio, you've got to get your heart pumping for an extended period of time. So most people, obviously, if you push yourself, you know, I always say to people, everybody who has arms and legs can literally do a mile in 12 minutes, right? And you're just working your way all the way down from there till you get to what the world record is, which is like 3:26. So I'm now, David, I'm not saying that you need to go out there and run 3:27. You know, be a second off the world record. You don't have to just destroy the world record. But what I am saying is you should have a focus to try and get to about 7 or 8 minutes is a decent pace. And it's the add-on to that. And the add-on factors are, your body needs good impact. You know to make the bones stronger. You need to have that impact in the way that you land on the ground. Never mind the cardio side of it. So intense cardio, keeping your heart at a high level for a good period of time, which is not an extended period of time. We're not telling people to run a marathon. We're just saying a mile. So you're pushing good pace, 7-8 minutes. I think then you can truly claim that you're, you know, in half decent shape. Not only be able to bench 140 and squat 250. That's, I just chucked those figures out. I don't know why I chucked those figures out.
I'm just saying what I do on a regular basis. Just my warm-up. I'm just throwing my warm-up in there, just, you know what I mean? Just in case somebody was wondering. I mean, nobody asked, but... I love it. Big Loz, obviously, in your area of training, right, you must... And we all do, to be honest with you, enter the gym, right? And obviously you go to the gym, sometimes you go to the gym on your own, or you've got your own people that you go to the gym with, but, you know, you always have your eye on what's happening in and around you, and there's always them times where you look around the gym and it's like, I've never seen that guy on the bike or the treadmill. Like, you know, that where there's people that's out there and you're like, hold on, what's going on over here? Like, what, no leg day? Same way, similar to the fact that it's like, you know, people are like people go to the gym on a consistent basis and don't add that cardio element to their training. Why is that? Do you think it's simply because of the drive towards aesthetics when it comes to...
Yeah, but partially. I think a lot of it comes down to what people enjoy. Mm. So, you know, going to the gym and just jumping on a treadmill is actually very boring. And I think that's the quickest way to put someone off coming to the gym. The way, you know, when we're talking about running a mile, you're talking about something specific that every athlete, as long as they're not, you know, don't have a physical disability, should be able to run a mile if put on the spot. But that doesn't mean you have to be going to the gym and running a mile every time, you know, you go there. You've got to find things that you enjoy, because if you enjoy your training, that's going to be the key way to keep you interested and keep you coming back. So, for instance, you know, I might have this, you know, 40-year-old woman that she doesn't like running. She doesn't like even going to the gym. So we're going to try and get her to do something fun. If I say jump on the treadmill and run a mile, she's going to be bored within 2 or 3 weeks. So we try and make it interesting, whether, you know, with what I do, I can make the strongman events much, much lighter, make a circuit out of them that where we focus a lot more on the conditioning and fitness side of things rather than actually lifting, you know, strongman weights. You can bring things right down. Everything's loadable now in the gyms. You create a little circuit that's a lot more fun, short bursts of energy that they work hard. And then, like Colin mentioned earlier, it's about them recovering quickly and just keeping it enjoyable. So you get them doing that. If you then 4-6 weeks down the line, you say, right, today we're going to try a little run. get them to do that. It's a one-off thing. Their fitness is going to be good enough to do it. They don't need to be in the gym training specifically to run, you know, whether it's 20 minutes on the treadmill or a mile or whatever the distance is. You know, you don't need to be in the gym doing that every single session. I think the most important thing is keeping things enjoyable. And I actually see less and less people enjoying the gym these days because of things like social media, Instagram, etc. They see what the top athletes do and they just want to be there straight away rather than just enjoying the process, enjoying getting, you know, as Colin, as an athlete, I'm sure you didn't start off just thinking, I'm going to be the Olympic champion. It was like, this is fun, I'm enjoying it. And then you progress and you progress and you get better. Same with me with Strongman. I didn't start off thinking, you know, I'm just going to do this to try and be a pro. It was something that was fun. I got hooked. And then as you progress, your drive and your hunger become more increased, and then you start focusing on new targets. But if it's not fun to start with, you're going to struggle to keep at it.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, touching on what you mentioned there, Loz, Colin, do you want to just let us know, how did you, what made you start, how did you start?
Yeah, well, I mean, Lawrence summed it perfectly well there, really. I mean, I always said to people, the first thing I did was have a good time. And for me, sport was about playing. It wasn't about taking something very intensely in that sense. And as I enjoyed it more and more and more, I got better at it because I was putting more time in. I was spending more time at doing something I found fun. And then, of course, when you, it becomes a little bit standardized, doesn't it, then, when you start to do specific things. So, you know, you, from going running between lampposts as a kid, all of a sudden you have to run 100 meters. And when you're running 100 meters, then you have something to judge against other people. So straight away you can go, okay, I've done 100 meters in this time. You live in Birmingham, how quick can you do the 100 meters? Or you live in Ipswich, and how fast can you do it? So you get that sense of a standardized distance, and then you can compare it with the time, and then you see how good you are. And then at the end, you know, you keep pushing it, you keep pushing it, you end up enjoying it more and more, put more time and effort in there, you get highly skilled, and you become a champion.
Easy as that.
The keys! Listen, Colin's dropping some gems here. The keys, all right? That's it. That's the playbook. But yeah, no, honestly, yeah. Beyond, go, please continue.
Yeah, so I think, you know, that's always got to be the most important message that you give to anybody. You must have fun. You know, and you know, Lawrence, you said so well, I go to the gym now and I see people looking miserable, right? And I'm thinking, if this is a chore for you, don't do it. You shouldn't, you know, I mean, I have medals. It was a chore when I was trying to earn medals. Yeah. Now I'm just happy that I can come to the gym and chat. I mean, you know, a couple of people that I train with, I mean, we're big chatters. And when we're at the gym at 6:30 in the morning and people are looking miserable, the last thing I want to do is hear us lot laughing, right? And I'm looking, thinking, well, then go home, because we're here to socialize and to work hard. And we will go, we will work hard, we will work intensely, but we are, nobody could ever deny we're not having a good time.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, if for me, the gym is a bit of, it's like my social time. I don't go to the pub and stuff like that. So, you know, going to see my friends at the gym, we do have a chat, we do have a laugh, you know, but like Colin said, when it's time to work, we work hard. You get that, you know, that good feeling from a hard workout. You know, you get those release of endorphins and you feel good in yourself after a tough session, and I love that feeling, just pushing myself through the limits and then afterwards feeling like, you know, I've worked hard and I feel good, and it just makes you happier. You're around people that you like, you have a bit of banter in the gym, a bit of fun. If you're dragging yourself, like, people always often, one of the things I get asked is, how do you stay motivated? And the easiest way to stay motivated in something is to enjoy it. You know, and you know, Colin and myself have both competed at a high level, and there'll be times where you don't enjoy it because it's becoming a job at that kind of, you know, stage. But right now I'm not competing for anything. I love going to the gym, just enjoying it, you know, getting out the house, getting a sweat on, pushing my body through some, you know, some tough workouts, setting different types of challenges now than I was when I was competing full time, and it's still fun. And as long as it's fun, it makes it so much easier to drag yourself out of the house and go and, you know, get in the gym.
Absolutely. It's funny because both of what you're saying is literally the carbon copy of what I'm like, to be honest with you. Like, when I get to the gym, there's a couple people that call me and the my people that we go to the gym, they call us butterfly gang because we're social. We're social butterflies, isn't it? Like, it's like you lot come to the gym and occasionally lift weights. That's what it's like. We're like, nah. We don't talk in between sets. We do sets in between talking. That's how it goes down. But it's like, for that very reason, I'm there on a consistent basis from that perspective. And even when it comes to running, a couple of months ago, in the height of lockdown, quite a few friends of ours, we just got on an app together, and then we just said, okay, we're going to do 100K this month. We're going to do we're just going to challenge ourselves to do 100K this month. People putting in videos in there, just motivating and pushing each other, and that element of fun and some degree of competition, but even just competition from the sense of we all want to get there, was something that pushed us all to do what we usually don't like doing. Because I'm not a runner. I find running boring, if I'm completely honest. I know that I'm running, and sometimes when I'm actually out there running, I'm like, why am I running? No one's chasing me. Like, it's like, what? You know, it's just like, I'm not, you know, it's like, my mind is just like, hold on, wait a minute. I'm not being chased. I'm not chasing anybody. What am I actually doing here? So it's like, I have to get myself into like a place in order to get out there and do it. And that's usually for me, typically what gets me there, friends, motivation and competition.
And I understand during these periods of time, it's really difficult because I'm with you there because I'm not the world's best runner. I could do it in a group. So yeah. Like you mentioned, you know, I kind of had to do it when there was a group of people. I thoroughly enjoyed running and going out for that particular run and that jog. And I never use running, funny enough, as, you know, distance running. We're talking about running, middle distance running, you know, talking about running miles, et cetera, et cetera. I never use that really as a training tool. Yeah. I just use it as a benchmark. So every 6 weeks, when there was tests, things to do, you know, test sets of whatever, then we'd always chuck the mile in as something that would be as a little tester. And the real test was, you know, not whether I could run it in 6:30 or, you know, because I think my best was like something like 5:42 or something like this. It was how quickly we would get our heart rate back down to our resting heart rate. So we'd run the distance. Then we'd be there and we'd be testing everybody going, right, what's your heart going? Yeah. And we were getting it really calmed down. And once it calmed and it got that to resting, then we knew that we were in great shape. So we'd use it as a benchmark in preparations for other things.
Now, that's incredible looking at, because most people don't look at all of these other factors. Or there's other factors and facets that you can look at with stuff like cardiovascular training, like running, for example, as a barometer for success or for a barometer of how far you've come and go. Usually when it comes to weight training, you can see, okay, I've added 0.5 this week or 0.25 and so on and so forth from that. And usually running, people see it as a standard of time, but that's true. It's interesting because I haven't personally ever thought of that, and now especially with all the technology that we've got out, people can actually, you know, do that right from their wrists.
Yeah, with no rush, just easily, nice, cool and calmly, and it would just go blink blink, there you go, I'm unfit. It says it on your watch, just look at it.
You got an app for it, it must be right.
Yes. Is fitness based solely upon cardio, or where does the strength element come into it?
There's a lot to be said. And first of all, when I coach athletes, I try to get them prepared for being overall fit. So that if they leave my group as sprinters or hurdlers, they should be able to run a decent and train with the best 800 meter runners in the country. And if they are in my hurdle group, they should be able to work out with the best triple jumpers and long jumpers in the country. And if they're in the gym, they should be able to weightlift with the best shot putters and discus throwers in the country. So for me, it's all about complete fitness. It's a 360. You get an incredibly high rate of general fitness, and then add on to that, you do your specifics for your event. There is no shortcut. I remember when most of the youngsters, when I first get in contact with me, they always ask me a question. They always ask me the question is, what did you do training-wise when the year before you broke the world record? And I said, straight answer is like, don't even concern yourself what I did the year before. Yeah. You better look what I was doing 12 years yeah. before. Because what I was doing in the warm-up, in my warm-up,
yeah.
the year I broke the world record, you couldn't do now, yeah. today. There's athletes that I were, and I'm not going to name any of them now, but I have a stronger core than them now, and I've been retired. I haven't got enough fingers to count when it comes to years. But I'm telling you, I do my core exercise. I take them through core exercises. They are absolutely atrocious, and yeah. they're out there at this moment representing our country. So it's getting that real, there's no fast route. It's getting the overall package absolutely spot on. No hiding place. Work hard and everything. You have to work hard at everything. No just cardio, no just weights. Mo Farah was great. Why? He sprinted with sprinters. He ran with the best distance runners. He was the complete athlete, and that is the important structure of it. And quickly before Lawrence jumps in here, there was a Swiss shot putter by the name of Werner Gunther, and he was the Olympic champion and he was the world champion. And the first time I went to a training camp in Lanzarote. Now this man, my mum and dad nicknamed him the Man Mountain, right? This guy was 6'7" and he's a shot putter, but he is like solid, yeah. right? Like, oh, the first thing I saw him do was hurdles. He was going over the hurdles. I was hurdling over.
What?
That's how agile that man was. And I literally went, I could not literally believe what I saw when Werner Gunther was going over there. And so from there on in, I knew I couldn't use any excuses.
Yep.
I couldn't use any excuses. You know, oh, I'm too small to lift that amount of weight or blah, 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 blah. When I've just saw a man who's twice my weight, twice my height, hurdling.
I tell you what, shot putters are incredible athletes. Incredible all-round athletes, tremendous power, tremendous explosive power, but they're fit and they're fast and they're agile. They need that technical ability as well. They cover every single aspect that you need of fitness. And I know a few good shot putters that have done very well in strongman, because I think weightlifters transfer very, very well as well. They mm-hmm. they learn incredibly good skills. They get exceptionally proficient at the skills, and they have a good general amount of fitness. And then I'm sure when you were at your best, Colin, you sacrificed a little bit in some areas of fitness. So when you did 110 hurdles?
Hurdles, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
for you,
yeah.
the most important thing was how fast you were across the finish line for 110. It didn't really matter how fast you were to run a marathon, did it? You could you
No. Know. No, exactly right. And you know, but I was generally very, you know, very fit. I mean, I was very impressive when I go to lift weights. You know, we would, and so with all the girls that we used to train with us,
yeah.
and they were so impressive. I mean, one of the girls, sprinter Carmen, she weighed 42 kilos. She was bench pressing 80 kilos, reps of six,
crazy.
80 kilos. Kay was cleaning nearly 100 kilos at 52 and a half kilos yeah. body weight. They were exceptionally strong athletes. I got to tell you this story because this made me laugh so much, right? Now, we were in a gym. It was a friend of ours' wedding, and we a whole group of us were going to the gym. And so we got to the gym, and you can imagine, we were athletes, so we were quite light. I mean, when I was competing, I weighed like, I don't know, 72 and a half kilos. I was kind of slight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so were all of us. Anyway, we went into this gym, and this guy was doing squats, and he was squatting, using squatter, and he was squatting 130 kilos to the bench. So he's doing half squats to the bench and getting out, right? And one of our girls, Kay, was literally just standing behind him like this, arms folded like this. And he finished his reps. He turned round to her and he said, oh, do you want me to take some weights off this for you, love? And we all went, oh, wrong yes. person no. to yes. say that to.
Oh, no.
So Kay said nothing. She just lifted a 25 and put another 25 on, gave him the look, went under the squat rack, and just started repping them out, right? I never saw a man move from a gym so fast in all my days. But this is the important thing, you know, is that, you know, you've got to respect what people are doing, first of all. You know what they're doing. People are agile. They may look slight, but they're highly motivated because they're world-class athletes. So they're going to push themselves to get a great level of fitness. And I think this is the way that the general public should perceive themselves too, in getting a high level of fitness. Not just, don't go to yourself, oh, well, I'm not an Olympic athlete. Who asks you to be an Olympic athlete? What we're saying is for you to have that genuine combination of overall fitness. You can be super strong, you can be big, but you can also run a decent mile. Because that's all we're saying, is a decent mile.
Yeah. No, exactly that. People's perception is always going to be there, unfortunately. You know, I'm a very large man, at 25 stone. People will look at me and think I can't move. I remember when, I mean, a funny story, when I first met my wife, she's, you know, really small, you know, about, she was about 59 kilos at the time. Mm-hmm. And she challenged me to a race thinking that I'd be really, really slow. Now, bear in mind, I'm a 400 plus kilo squatter. I've got exceptionally powerful legs. Even though I'm big, there's a lot of power that I can produce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely blitzed. I was just like a gazelle, just kind of in jogging mode. Like, and she was left behind. She's like, I don't understand how you're so fast. I'm like, you got to understand, I'm an athlete. Like you have to be for hurdles, for sprinting. You need that power in those legs. If you don't have strong legs, you're not going to be competitive. And, you know, although I was bigger, I could move well. And I'm actually a world record holder in a lot of moving events for strongman. That was what I excelled at more so than the static lifts. I was good at moving with weights, you know, like yokes, car walks, things like that. I was exceptionally fast at. And like you say, people look at you and they think there's no way you can do that. But I'm good on anything to do with sprints. I'm extremely fast. I've done the Concept 2 500 meter row in 1:14, which is world class times.
Yeah, that's well decent.
Now, I might die if you ask me to do 10,000 meters.
But nobody asks you to do 10,000 meters, right? Yeah.
But it again becomes that specific training. But you do have that ability to cross over, and I'm sure with a lot of your athletes, Colin, same with mine, when they start. You know, people will see that they're focusing on one sport and they go, oh, they'll never, you know, they're too small to do this, they're too big to do that. They are training for something specific. Most general, like, good athletes can adapt to other things as well. And, you know, the exceptional ones are the guys that can do everything.
Yeah, and we get furious about them.
Yeah, we don't like them.
Highly talented and motivated. And I look at them and I just hate them, basically. Just, why pretend, Colin? I'm a hater.
I'm a straight up hater. No, it's funny because, Loz, it's true because I was going to say, quite a few people would probably look at strongmen and think, you don't possess the cardio type of, and it's probably a common conception. Misconception from that standpoint, but it's probably like a common conception from
it
that.
Depends which level you go to. There are people that use strongman as an excuse to be overweight and slow and not athletic. There's this kind of bad kind of myth that you don't need to be fit to be a strongman. You know, that people think you're just a big brute with no kind of intelligence and you're just like a Neanderthal, if you like. But the top guys are all smart guys. They all understand that, you know, smart training is important. They understand that a general amount of fitness is important, because in strongman, it's not just about lifting a weight from A to B. There's a lot of events that require time limits and repetitions and distance and speed. So there's many, many elements to the sport. And when I train people, I try and make sure they're as good all round as possible. You know, there's always people, you know, you might get someone who's a bench press specialist in powerlifting and all they do is bench press. And they can be incredible benchers, but their general fitness is not good. But if you look at the top strongmen in the world, the top guys, when we're talking guys that can compete in any competition and do well, they have good general fitness as well, because they have to. Although they might not be able to run a marathon, they need to be able to work hard. They need their heart rate up high for a minute and a half sometimes. And like Colin mentioned earlier, they need to be able to recover quickly, because if they can't recover, then they won't be able to perform at a high level in the next event.
Absolutely, yeah, that's very interesting. Very, very interesting from that perspective. You touched earlier on about enjoyment and having to enjoy what you're doing in order to start. And I I did move on to Colin to ask him how he got into it. How about yourself, Loz? Because I know the listeners will be like, what, Davey? What, you're not asking? You're not finding out? I want to know about Loz as well. So, Loz, can you just let us know, Big Loz, just let us know, how did you start? Was you always into lifting heavy? Was you always bigger than everybody else? Or how did you...
Yeah. I was always sporty from a very young age. From like the age of 3, I was interested in sport. I started off doing Kung Fu, believe it or not. I was, Kung Fu from the age of 3 to about 11. When I got into secondary school, I took up rugby, athletics, I played basketball. I was on all the school teams for everything. I was one of those kids that I wasn't so academic. I loved sport. I loved all, I used to love watching the Olympics and, at the time I'm not so into football now, but I'd watch football. I played rugby for the Southwest. And then as I got kind of older, the training for rugby, I started doing more strength training. Yeah. And eventually it was like, well, this is for me. This is more, what I want to do. And I found strongman when I was 21. Actually, at the same time, I was playing table tennis, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, I went from rugby to table tennis to strongman. Yeah. And I used to coach table tennis, actually. I was, used to coach a lot of the national juniors and coach for some of the biggest clubs in the country. But then I was trying to do strongman and table tennis at the same time. Very different sports. Very different sports that require a lot of different types of training. And the strongman was just... I was always a, fairly strong, athletic kid, and the strongman overtook that. I loved it so much as soon as I started it. It was the personal challenge, just wanting to push myself harder, make myself better, whether it be getting stronger at an event, or a lot of strongman events are about speed as well. So, I taught myself how to be quicker and move faster. And I just loved it. I did my first ever comp in 2009. 2005, and then I was at World's Strongest Man in 2008. So I progressed very, very quickly. It just came, I was a naturally good athlete, which helped. And then over the years, I've managed to get stronger and stronger. But being athletic helped me more than being strong. Because in a strongman event where you've got 6 events, only one or two require brute strength. The rest require speed, endurance to a certain degree, technique, mental toughness as well. There's so many elements. I've met many, many really strong guys in the gym, but as soon as it starts hurting in a contest, they're useless and they just give up. Whereas the top guys have to have that mental toughness to push themselves that little bit harder. And when I was younger, I loved it. Maybe now I take it a little bit more easy. I've put my body through the limits. But I back when I was in my early 20s, I absolutely loved that, punishing my body, pushing myself harder and harder. I had a weird relationship with it. I liked the pain.
I'm giggling. I'm totally giggling there because I can't remember my early 20s. But all in all, no, you're right in that sense. A friend of mine quite recently asked me how I felt. I'm 53 now. He said, "How do you feel, Colin?" I said, "If I'm honest, I do feel better physically now than I did when I was in my mid-20s and early 30s. And he went, "How is that possible? You were a performing athlete then." I said, "Well, do you know what? To be honest, I don't have the aches and pains I had then." Yeah. Because training was punishing. It was relentless, as you know. Yeah. It's what your life is all about. Mm-hmm. So even your recovery is based around your training. It's not the other way around. Your eating is based around your training. Your socializing is based around your training. Yeah. Mm. So there's no shortcuts if you want to make it to the top of your game. Absolutely. You've got to work hard. You've got to stay committed. And the thing I would always use is something called consistent application, isn't it? It's to apply your skills, your work ethic consistently. You can do that, Bob's your uncle, Fanny's your aunt, and the rest of that saying, because I really don't know it.
Did you find when it was time to retire, it was easy for you or was it hard?
Well, easy.
Was it? Right.
And do you know what what was interesting? I know David's laughing there now. But I was so committed. I was really so committed to the sport, but I actually had enough of competing.
Yeah.
I loved the training element, but it was the competing that was getting me down. So I knew if I was going to stay on top of my game, I had to always raise my level of performance. I had to kind of keep lifting myself, And that part of me had vanished. Yeah. I didn't have the same desire or the same commitment. Yeah. So I knew I was going to have like 19, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds beating me, who I know if I really put my mind to the job, they couldn't lace my shoes.
Yeah.
But I knew, you know what, I've had my time. It'll be very much now time to retire.
I think
everybody said to me, you know, sorry there, but everybody said to me when I was going to retire, they went, nah, you will keep training, you will go out. No.
Yeah.
Spikes. Bin. Trainer. Bin. Where's those donuts? Yeah.
It's quite interesting hearing that because, like, I picked up a real bad injury last year at World's Strongest Man. I was lifting a 610-kilo yoke, and my Achilles blew out.
Oh.
And at the time, it was pretty devastating.
Yeah.
And I had to really kind of, like, talk to myself and think, do I still want to do this? And when I kind of look back, I didn't feel I was hungry for the last couple of years training. And I decided, right, there and then, I'm going to stop competing and focus on giving back to the sport, coaching, you know, doing other things. I've set up my own business. I've given myself new goals. I do commentary for strongman shows, etc. And I'm loving that. I'm still involved, but in a different way. It's like a new goal. It's new things to focus on. And I had to have that conversation with myself. Because people are like, oh, you'll be back, you know, you'll have to be, you know, you're still one of the best guys, you can still compete. And I honestly believe I could go back and I could still hang on for a few more years, but I don't want to hang on. I want to do it at the either absolute top and be the best I can be, or I'm going to step back and let these new guys come through and try and help them. And it's interesting because so many people have said, oh, you'll want to compete again, you'll want to do it. And honestly, there's no desire to do it at all. I'm quite happy being a fan now, bringing my general fitness better, you know, making my general fitness better, still being reasonably strong, but there's more important things than just lifting the weights now. And I can, like you, go to the gym and enjoy it a bit more than having that pressure of, right, you need to do this today or else you're going to get a kick up the ass from the coach.
Yeah, no, it's funny because, you know, talking to a lot of athletes and former athletes is usually, it's always usually one way or the other. There's usually never people like in the middle. It's either, thank God, I'm out, and I'm enjoying life, or there's people on the other side of the spectrum that are like looking over the fence, like, oh my days, you know what, I could probably beat him. Both areas of sport are extremely blessed to have the likes of both of you, because as you both in essence from very early on pointed out the importance of cardiovascular training to it, you both answered the question profoundly. Are you really fit if you can't run a mile? Both of you are like, nah, you can't really be the fit if you can't run. He's like, nah.
You could be highly skilled and do something at a very high level, but that doesn't mean you're fit.
But then talking about our listeners, we've got some questions from them for you.
Okay.
I'm going to kickstart with Big Loz.
Okay.
They want to know, what was your most memorable strongman moment?
Probably when I won Europe's Strongest Man, because it was the first time we did a huge show in an indoor arena. Do you guys know Hafþór Björnsson? He played the Mountain in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
So he's the five-time European champion. He's won 5 years in a row. And the only guy that's managed to stop him is little old me. I managed to beat him in 2016. I took the title off him, and you know, it was the first time we did it. We'd done shows in front of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people before. This time we've sold out the First Direct Arena in Leeds, so it was about 12,000-15,000 people.
Wow.
I'd been working on a film at the time and hadn't been training. I'd been training hard, but I was like literally on set to film at 5 a.m. You work long days on films. Then my mate opened up his gym for me to train at like 11, 12 at night. And then I'd sleep on his sofa ready for the next day of filming. And no one knew I was doing it because they were like, oh, you know, when I won, they were all like, oh, the only reason Loz won is because Thor was doing the Game of Thrones. I'd spent the last 5 weeks filming and ended up going there. I knew the events were good for me. I trained hard. I ended up breaking 2 world records in that contest and then winning the contest as well. That was a big one for me. It's not just winning the title, but who I beat. He's gone on to be one of the absolute best strongmen of all time. And, you know, it really helped. Mike Tyson was tweeting about it, actually, when I won. So that was pretty cool. And I'd had a number of seconds, and you know, I'd come real close before, but then I'd either come second or I picked up quite bad injuries and I had knockbacks, and I actually retired in 2015. I ended up tearing my tricep, and I was like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. Managed to get back into the gym. My family were just really supportive. They just go in, like we said about earlier, just have some fun, enjoy it. And the bug came back, and for 6 months I trained like a machine. I was hell bent on doing the best that I could. I didn't go in saying, oh, I'm going to win. But in my heart, I knew I had a chance. And it just, everything went right on the day. Two world records, performed really well on the rest of the events, and ended up toppling the mountain. So to become Europe's strongest man 2016.
Yes, big Loz. That is epic. You know what I mean? You saved the accolades for last. I see what you did there. But no, honestly,
well, I've won a version of a world title, but it's not world strongest man. There's a couple of different federations. So I won, you might call it an easier world title. I still beat a guy called Zdrina Savickas, who is arguably the greatest of all time, but he was past his best. Okay. So, you know, for me, beating Thor at Europe's is bigger than winning the Ultimate Strongman world title. So, I can call myself a world champion, but sometimes when you think of who you beat on the day, that certain victories are a little bit more important to you.
Important. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, thank you. Thank you for that. Colin, over to you. What was the toughest race that you've ever run and why?
Toughest race was probably trying to beat my sister to remote control when I was a kid. And that was because I wanted to watch Grain Jill. But but athletically, let's think now. That is a really seriously good question. And the answer is why. Most probably... the European Championships, me trying to win my very first European Championships in 1990. And I was injured during that actual build up towards those championships, and at one stage I didn't think I was actually gonna run, and I struggled to get through all the rounds. And when I lined up in the final, I had a friend called Dalton Grant, who was one of the national high jumpers, cut my hair in all sorts of funky styles to try and distract from this massive strapping I had on my knee. It didn't work. people still were focused on this big strap that I had on my knee there, because I tore some cartilage and I just literally lost all the power, etc., etc. And the person who was absolutely flying was my teammate, Tony Jarrett. And so to go into the competition knowing that the person who's potentially going to be your biggest rival is also a fellow Brit, when you've been holding the mantle of being the best in your country, was a tough ask. And I literally won it on the dip. And I became the European champion for the first time. And I remember when I went back to the hotel, my team colleagues applauded me. Because they knew that I was under a lot of stress, and I just went, I'll be back in a moment. And I went into the bathroom and I just burst into tears. I just cried. There was, you know, the relief of, I've done it.
Yeah.
But now I need to have an operation. But that's okay. I've already got the title. I've got the title. A couple of weeks off. I've got the title. So yeah, that was most probably my toughest race and the reason why.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of areas in sport that a lot of people don't know that. Or the extent to which people compete with minor injuries or some injuries for quite a long time. I was talking to a footballer, quite a big footballer. His name's Adebayo Akinfenwa. He's known as the strongest man on FIFA. He's actually known as the strongest professional footballer from that perspective. If you see his size, you think he plays for the NFL or rugby or something. he's actually huge. But he was talking about that as well. He just... got his side promoted into the championship. He plays up front for them. And, you know, I did a show with him recently for the FA Cup, and he was, you know, on crutches, and everybody's like, oh my goodness, what are you on? And he's like, listen, I've been playing with this injury for months. Do you see what I'm saying? And I've known I need to have this operation, but I wanted us to win, to get through and to qualify for the championship, which he did. And then now he's like, okay, cool, now I can actually have my operation. I'll be off for a few months. But it was all worth it. The pain and pushing through all of that There was a lot of emotion. A lot of the stuff that he spoke about in the post-match interview went viral because of the extent of the emotion. But nobody knew, obviously, on the surface, that he was carrying such an injury.
It's such a common occurrence with professional athletes, though. There's you see people on like forums and online, and they'll criticize these top athletes, and they have no idea the pain that they go through sometimes. You know, I've had tremendously bad injuries over the years. The amount of muscles that I've torn and still finished the competition.
Yeah.
And people, you know, you should have done better on that, blah, blah, blah. They don't know what you've gone through. I mean, not even sometimes just the injuries, but the traveling that you go through and how small. Like, I think often people don't realize we're still humans.
Yeah.
They see you as robots, and you'll have these performances that just aren't up to scratch, and everyone will criticize you and slate you. And at the end of the day, you know, I can think of multiple times where I've competed in a lot of pain, but you block it out, and that's what champions do. You keep pushing through. And I'm sure Colin's been in that situation many, many times where people have criticized your performance or not known what's actually gone on behind the scenes to get you to the contest.
And, you know, and added to that, I kind of fall into that category myself now, working as a commentator. Somebody underperforms. The first thing I'm doing is giving them hell instead of actually saying to myself, well, actually, there could be some kind of injury because I've been through there myself and I kind of know. But also, you know, what I was going to chuck out to you guys then is that, you know, if you're on that start line, you've declared yourself fit.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, you can't go crying about what was wrong after. Because once you're on that start line, you got to deal with any consequences because your opponents see you as the name and you're fit to compete. You're there to be slaughtered. And I remember that's one of the things my dad always used to say to me, this is not a war, don't take any prisoners, kill everybody.
Yeah.
So get on that line, and that was my attitude, you know? So yeah, so you can't, unfortunately, you gotta, you know, take the knocks if you underperform.
But there's a high chance seven of those eight guys that are on the starting line are all got something going on.
Yes.
That's just professional sport for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the continued hope when you're standing there as well with your own little niggling one as well.
That guy's definitely suffering more than I am.
Yeah. I was just thinking that if you're a male 100 meter runner and Usain Bolt was injured, you'd think, well, what can he do? He's injured, he's still going to run 2 meters faster than me. How can I live with this?
Yes, he'll still be celebrating before the finish line. All right, Lawrence.
Long before.
Lois, let me hit you with another one. I want to know, what's your go-to post-competition recovery meal?
Ooh, I tend to keep my diet pretty... When I'm competing, it's pretty basic. I tend to eat a lot of white basmati rice and beef. That's kind of my main meal. So post-workout, it'll be about 30 minutes after I've trained, I'm getting rice and meat into me. That's just standard for strongman, to be honest. My meal staple, I tend to eat about 6,000 calories a day when I'm competing. First meal is oats, and then I've probably got about four meals of beef and rice, green leafy veg, and then before bed, either like a yogurt or a cottage cheese, something like that, which will give you kind of some slow release protein through the night. But real boring when I'm competing. When I'm off kind of training, when it's just training for fun, I eat whatever. I really need to kind of get focused now and tidy up my diet. I think that's what I found quite hard since I've stopped competing. It's like I can just eat what I want, and that's kind of become a problem, especially over lockdown. So now it's like, right, I don't know if I could do that mile run right now. I need to kind of get focused.
I spent the last hour talking about it, but really and truly,
that's what commentators do, isn't it? Now we just talk about what we could do back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah. I love all that. I love it.
Oh, man. Colin, over to you. Right, if you could have had any other career, what would it have been?
Cricketer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love cricket. I still love cricket. And it was that camaraderie that you have in the cricket team as well that I thoroughly enjoyed. So you know, and also it was not you. You've got to be crazy not to want to do a sport where you have a break for tea and then you come back and, and you come back and play, right? Yes. So surely cricket got to be the game. But if on another level, again, so as a team event, it would always have been cricket, as I say. Mm-hmm. That I'm not joking about. But as an individual, it would have been tennis. I thoroughly enjoy the game of tennis. And also, I kind of feel like tennis is a little bit investment into your older age as well, because you could be 75, 80. I mean, I play tennis with my mate's father, who's 88.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he can still serve aces against us. Now, I heard you all saying, what kind of player are you if an 88-year-old serving aces?
Hitting them corners.
I could read all your faces, so easy, right? But the key thing is, yeah, it's having that sense of sport and activity to me has to be still fun.
Yes.
So whatever I invested into, it would be to make it fun. And athletics for me, obviously my speciality, hurdles, you couldn't be doing flying over 3'6" barriers at the age of, well, at the age of my age now, 53. But if you're a distance runner, you could easily be going out for a nice steady run in your group, have that whole social element of it again, which is really important just to keep your general fitness up.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that the ongoing trend from this conversation, or the ongoing theme from this conversation is enjoyment. Like, do what you love, do what you enjoy, and you'll continue to do it. And at the same time, find some enjoyment from it. So find a way to engineer it. If we're talking about running, for example, find a way to engineer that cardio area or cardio element of training. In a way in which that you can enjoy it, so it wouldn't seem like a boring chore from that perspective. And then I guess moving on from there, what we'd like to ask all our guests before they leave is to let us know one thing or one person that's influenced them in life, and one piece of advice. So I think that's a nice little segue from you know, thinking about ways in which you can engineer for success in terms of enjoyment. If you could, I'll start with you, Big Loz. Let us know one influence of yours and a piece of advice.
A big influence for me, believe it or not, is Roger Federer, which kind of people look at me and go like, you're a strong man, what are you kind of going on about tennis players for? But I'm a big tennis fan, and with Colin bringing it up then, you know, it just made me think of I really love the way he kind of, you know, portrayed himself in his career. He's, you know, a real class act. He's obviously amazingly talented, hard worker, but I respected that kind of the way he was, or the way he still is, to be honest. You know, he's still going strong, but I've never really been like a trash talker or someone, you know. It was all about just being bettering myself with my career, and I sort of looked up to athletes like that when I was first kind of starting out, and you know, I really respected that. You know, I guess when I was a kid, you used to look up to like the likes of Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger, with the muscle guys, and you wanted to be like big and strong. And then in terms of strongman, there's a guy called Zdrina Saviskas who I always looked up to.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the, in my eyes, he's the greatest of all time. Won multiple, you know, world titles in all the biggest shows. He's won, you know, countless times, broken countless world records. But again, the way he sort of portrays himself, you know, he's humble with it, and I massively respected that, and I've always tried to be similar myself. Advice to people starting out, and I know we keep saying it is the most important thing is to enjoy it, because if you don't enjoy it, why are you doing it? And unfortunately, I do see people in various different sports now coming into strongman as well. They see certain fame that people get, or whether it be on Instagram or TV or YouTube or whatever it might be, and they want the fame, but they don't want to put the work in to be good. And if you don't enjoy the grind and the contest and the training and stuff like that, don't put your body through it, because I'm sure Colin can testify for this as well. It's hard. It's hard being a top level athlete. It's really not easy. It doesn't just, you know, you don't just wander into the gym, do a few light bench presses, and then you know you're a world champion. There's, you know, Colin said earlier, people were asking what he was doing the year before. It's the 10, 15, 20 years before that you're putting that work in. It takes time. I would say get around a group of people that have similar interests, because again, that makes it easier. Learn from experienced people. There's so much information out there now online, but it's deciphering whether it's good information or not. You know, there's almost too much information, but you can find so much free information. If you're looking at getting something like Strongman, get a coach that can help with technique, making sure you learn good form at a young age is massively important. But number one, out of everything, enjoy it, because if you enjoy it, then everything else will be easy. You can figure out the training, the recovery, the food. You can go through the hard sessions. Without that enjoyment, you're never going to get to the top level.
Colin, please, yeah, over to you.
Yeah. Well, for me, my influence was Daley Thompson. Mm-hmm. And for the real reason, there's always a little joke towards this with Daley. I met him when I was 16, and I was so, like, mesmerized, because he was a world record holder, he was the world champion, Commonwealth champion, European champion, Olympic champion. All that was brilliant. But for me, what motivated me the most, the man drove a Porsche, and I just wanted a Porsche, right? So if the route to getting a Porsche was me to be dedicated and committed, I was going to do that, you know? Yeah. And I was lucky enough to train with him when I was really young. And he was brilliant, because he did make training fun. So 8 hours a day training with Daley was breathtaking, because you knew you were training hard. Yeah. You knew you were training hard. But also, it was so much fun, because he made it everything a little bit competitive. And, you know, whether we were throwing a shot or doing a javelin, it was something that was competitive. And I remember this, and I'll never forget this. We were throwing the discus, and I just couldn't get the technique right. And so I said, I'm giving up on this. I said, I'm not doing this. And he went, why? Why are you stopping? I said, it was because I got really small hands, right? And I can't hold the 2 kilo discus, so I'm out of there, right? Yeah. He went, come here. So I went over to him, and he put his hand up, and I put my hand up next to his, and they were exactly the same size. And he said to me, from here on in, don't ever make an excuse.
Yeah.
Stay focused, stay committed, and keep trying. And I took that right into my heart, you know? And I thought, you know what? Those are really wise words from a champion.
Yeah.
Don't. So I looked for a really short, coward's way out. Oh, yeah. My hands are too small, yeah. So I'm going. And I didn't go with the fact that, actually, I'm not throwing very far. I'm not competitive in this, so I'm just backing off. You know, the idea is learn your trade well, stick to it. Again, you know, that consistent application, and I would have got there. I'd have gone, you know, to throw a decent distance. But I tried to look for the coward's way out, and he pulled me back in quickly. And I learned that lesson as a 16, 17-year-old. And so I was able to use that all the time. Anytime I felt low, anytime I felt like this is a bit too much for me, how big are your hands, son? How big are your hands?
Yeah. It's great advice, to be honest. Just focusing on your own progress. That's the most important thing. You know, not looking... I get it again in Strongman. People are like, oh, I'm 5'8". Is that too short? Or I'm 19 and I can lift this, and they want to know if that's any good. The most important thing, keep trying, keep getting better.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Some stone cold, solid advice there. And thanks for sharing that with us too, Colin, because... You know, we all do it, you know, in different ways. We all find an excuse. An excuse finds you when you're looking for it, or even when you're not looking for it, from that perspective. So that's some strong piece of advice there that was very close to you. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. And well, that just about wraps up this week's episode of My Proteins, the Scoop podcast. A huge, huge, massive thank you to our guest, Colin and Big Loz, who's given us some incredible insights, some real laughs, and some real insider stories and anecdotes of their professional careers. Please, guys, keep the conversation going via social media using the hashtag #TheScoop. And indeed, get involved in the comments as well. If you're watching this on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button as well. And everywhere else, hit the like button and get involved. Don't worry as well. We'll be back soon for another episode. I've been David Alorca. You've been watching The Scoop. Thank you for listening.